KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
KUOW is a self-sustaining service of the University of Washington.
From 94.9 KUOW, I'm Marcy Silman, and this is Weekday. King 5 Television's Alan Schauffler has left his longtime job at the Seattle station next week. Schauffler helps inaugurate a new cable news network called Al Jazeera America. We're going to talk with Schauffler later this hour. Also, two experts come in to tell us how to preserve the fruits of summer. As you just heard in the news, two huge fires are burning through in central Washington. The largest blaze is near Wenatchee, and last night, Kittitas County officials declared a state of emergency as the fire consumed more than 90,000 acres there. Forecasters have been watching the weather. They're worried that possible lightning storms will ignite even more blazes. Albert Castle joins us now. He's Resource Protection Division Manager at the State Department of Natural Resources. Hello. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you give us an update on the status of the two major fires? Let's start with Wenatchee first.
Okay, I'll start with the Clockham Tarps Fire. That's the name of it. It's currently 56,000 acres as of last night, burning south into Kittitas County from Chelan County. Making good progress yesterday, so that's a good thing. But they still have some key factors. Today's thunderstorms, which can produce some wind, different than what they've been seeing, as well as the stagnant air that's over here today. So it has some concerns besides health issues, also for our firefighters on the ground.
Are you in Wenatchee right now?
I am actually in Ellensburg this morning.
Okay.
I had to change plans. Come over here real quick.
So you mentioned more than 50,000 acres burning. That sounds like they've done quite a bit to help contain that fire.
They've made good progress over the last day and a half, 2 days. They're making good progress. The weather's helping a little bit with the wind dying down from previously over the weekend.
Now, the other fire is also on the edge of Kittitas County near Goldendale, right?
It is in Klickitat County and Yakima County boundary. It's roughly 20,000 acres, about 60% contained. That one there is looking very good for how conditions have been in the past few days.
Altogether, between these two fires, how many people were evacuated from their homes?
You know, I don't know the 100% that question. I do know they had 60 homes evacuated in Chelan County. And in Kittitas County, I'm not sure the exact number that they ended up with for evacuation.
Were there any deaths attributed to this?
No, none known to my knowledge. That's one thing we'd sure try not to have happen for any of our citizens.
Well, we're happy to hear that, but there was some property damage.
Some property damage on the fire in Chelan, Clockham Tarps. That was on the first day of the fire.
We hear reports that some hotshot crews were going to be brought in for the Clockham Tarps fire. Is that still in the works?
They're actually on scene from what I've seen. We had the hotshot crews on the first fire, mile marker 28 in Goldendale, moved them up to Clockham Tarps once they got that secure enough, and they're now out on the line working towards Kittitas County.
Now, what specifically do the hotshot crews do that the standard firefighters don't?
Well, the hotshot crews bring us a little more supervision, more expertise. They're a more experienced group of individuals that have been around the fire world, and we can put them, they put themselves at that higher level where we actually have more management on the ground and can do a lot more with that group of individuals. Very good group.
We're speaking
of experienced firefighters.
We're speaking with Albert Castle, who's Resource Protection Division Manager at the Washington State Department of Natural Resources. How did these two fires start?
Oh, well, the first one was, they're both human-caused fires. So it's something we got still under investigation on both. Hopefully here soon we can release what the cause was on both.
And did that play into the DNR decision to declare a statewide burn ban?
Part of it, yes. The resource availability for me, for the DNR resources, we are pretty stretched with initial attack capabilities right now. Also, the fuel models for us were well below our 20th percentile and what we would factor into making this decision for a statewide burn ban. They're below those charts and well ahead of schedule that we'd normally see in the middle of August. We've been running about 3 weeks ahead of schedule on any fuel drying over the last this last month.
Can you?
So that's all part of us putting on the burn ban, the full burn ban.
Can you explain what that means, fuel dose?
The which one? I apologize.
Well, you were talking about 20%.
Our fuel model charts, and that's the fuel drying for our 100 and 1,000 hour fuels that we watch very closely, because that is the driver of a lot of our large fires, for how long and how long they'll sustain the heat. So we puts our firefighters more at risk when you know that that fuel is dry.
So when you're talking about fuel, you're talking about what, grasses?
Logs.
Anything?
Yeah, you talk about your grass is our one-hour fuels, twigs, and then you get up to logs, trees, you know, the full tree, that kind of, that's what I would talk about for fuel.
You mentioned that these are, the drying process, I guess, is about 3 weeks ahead of schedule?
Right, from the heat, lack of rain this spring is a factor. We've been in a drying trend for quite some time with a lack of rain and across a lot of our state.
I had heard that the fire season was starting a little bit later than it had usually started. Is that not true?
Yep. No, I think we've been ahead of schedule for DNR protected lands since the first part of June. We actually started Western Washington in the first part of May, which is the you know, that did green up on the west side a little bit, but we're well ahead of schedule.
And are we expecting a more severe fire season than normal?
I would still say we're on an average trend for the number of ignitions, but the one thing we're trying to reduce is the human-caused fires. That does help us in all of our planning for fire suppression.
So what exactly does the burn ban cover?
Burn ban covers all of DNR protected lands, all of the timbered lands. It also protects all of the campfires in any of our protected lands, with 13 million acres across the state. It's in the timbered zones of the state of Washington.
So that means if you go to a campground in a state forest, you may not have a campfire, correct?
Right. You can't have a flammable campfire. There are some things you can have. Something that you can control the flame, but you can't have briquettes and you can't have an open flame.
So you could bring a little propane camp stove?
Right. There's a list that we look for that folks, that campers can use, but it's very specific. We don't want to have open flames, don't want to have briquettes that can stay there a long time, something that can last a while. Yes.
And how long is this burn ban in effect?
It's in effect until we start to get some appropriate moisture. Drying will probably be in effect. Currently, it's in effect till September 30th or until we drop it.
So if
because we get enough moisture at the end of the fire season.
I see. So if it started raining earlier, the ban would be dropped earlier?
Potentially, depending on how long that rain's going to last.
What are weather forecasters predicting right now, specifically for Central Washington, where these two big fires are burning?
Well, for the next couple of days, there's a chance of lightning. That's one of our concerns. You get some lightning, you get thunderstorms, you get some erratic winds that come with that. There's potential for some rain. I need to look at the forecast today, but that there is only going to be a couple of days, and then we're back into a drying trend.
Hmm.
So we'll be back into the wildfire fight rather quickly, especially in the dry grass fuel.
So you guys can ban things like campfires, but you can do nothing really about lightning. Or is there some
right.
Is there something that you try to do to prepare for that?
Preparing for the lightning is one of our challenges across the state. The one thing we can prepare for on that side is reducing the human-caused fires if possible. And then we are available to initial attack the new starts if we do get any from lightning.
Now, Albert, we talked about the two major fires. Are there any other places where smaller fires are burning right now that are of concern?
We've had a couple. We have with our partner, the Forest Service, There's a fire up Lake Chelan, the upper end of Lake Chelan on Moore Point that we're all concerned about a little bit. We've had other numerous little initial attacks across the state that, you know, a few acres here, or we had 2 days ago a 15-acre fire near Airway Heights in Spokane. So we're always chasing little fires that we want to try to keep off the landscape so we're prepared for this lightning.
How many firefighters do you have deployed at this point?
Well, between just the two fires alone, the two large fires, there's well over 2,000 firefighters out there. So we've got, between us and Oregon, there's quite a few fires going. Oregon is also fighting a lot of fires, especially in Southwest area.
We've heard a lot in the news about the fires in California. Is anything here as severe as what we saw down in the South, Southwest?
I would say that our two are fairly close to those two, unless those are in the urban interface. Been tracking those just a little bit, but right now Northwest is the highest priority for fire resources, so kind of puts you where we are.
Have we had to bring in firefighters from out of state?
We have a handful in from out of state. Some of the hotshot crews are from out of state. Some of the engine crews that are contractor from out of state. It just varies from area to area.
So just a last question has to do with citizens. It's not just fire season, it's also vacation season. You've got a ban on campfires, but what else should people who are venturing into either DNR lands or even federal lands think about?
Well, the one thing we want to always think about is just safety, fire safety. We want to try to avoid having any human-caused fires. So we want to make sure that we're doing our jobs as citizens to reduce those caused fires, be safe, and enjoy the time that they're out there to do. We want everyone to enjoy the recreational activities we have here in the Northwest, and a wildfire can take that away from us. We all have a great state here, and one that I want to protect, and want all my fellow citizens to enjoy.
Albert, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Anytime. Thank you.
Albert Castle is Resource Protection Division Manager at the State Department of Natural Resources. And again, the DNR has declared a statewide burn ban, and that means that when you go camping on state lands, you may not burn an open fire, perhaps a propane stove, but you may not make a campfire, and you may not use briquettes. This is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman.
It's 9:20. A new cable news service, Al Jazeera America, is opening a Seattle bureau with a familiar face, longtime local TV anchor Alan Schauffler. We'll talk with Alan about his 20 years at King TV and his new job with Al Jazeera in a minute.
Support for KUOW comes from Regents Blue Shield, connecting members to people and resources that matter to their health. Regents Blue Shield serves select counties in Washington and is an independent licensee of the BCBSA.
56 degrees in Seattle, expecting to reach 78 this afternoon. The morning clouds and fog should give way to sun later. Summertime in Seattle brings us a bounty of fresh fruit. Plums, figs, berries, all kinds of tasty delights. But those summer fruits don't stick around long enough for some of us. We'll get some ideas for preserving those tastes of summer 10 minutes from now.
From KUOW, I'm Marcy Silman. Longtime King 5 television reporter and anchor Alan Schauffler signed off the air this week, but it wasn't for good. Schauffler has joined the new Al Jazeera America network, and he's going to be contributing regional reports to them. Alan Schauffler joins me now. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Marcy.
You spent two decades with King, and I'm curious what tempted you to join this new American Al Jazeera.
Well, first of all, I spent two fabulous decades with King. Just a really great organization that gave me tremendous opportunities for a variety of different kind of stuff in television news. It was a fabulous place right to the very end. But it was 20 years, and, you know, that's enough, I think. I was just ready for a new a new phase, a new challenge, and this is a fascinating new challenge.
Well, it's a new challenge for you, but also for Al Jazeera. This is a brand new network.
Yeah, it's Al Jazeera America. It's distinct and separate from Al Jazeera and Al Jazeera English, which, of course, originate the first in the Middle East. The second is broadcast all over the world to English-speaking audiences. We are Al Jazeera America, standalone organization, funded with a grant from the Qatari government, a one-time-a-year grant, sort of a BBC model. And it's going to be in an American cable news network, hopefully attracting American viewers.
I know that Seattle is one of 12 bureaus that they've established. Are you the entire bureau?
I am the entire correspondent staff. but we have a photographer and a producer, field producer. So we are, at the current time, our staffing level is 3.
What kind of stories are you going to be covering?
You know, whatever we find in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, BC, Alaska, Montana maybe, that we think are interesting stories about interesting people that help illuminate issues that might be of interest to the rest of the country. I mean, I've spent 20 years trying to make everything local, and now my challenge is to sort of turn it around 180 degrees and push it back out through, you know, the filter of TV in a different way and try to tell stories that are of interest to, you know, Bill and Betty Fenske in Paducah, Kentucky.
So will the audience be mainly in the United States, or is this a global audience?
No, this is Al Jazeera America is an American cable network.
Specifically?
There'd be a possibility, I guess, that, for instance, my stories, if somebody somewhere deemed that they had editorial value beyond just Al Jazeera America, like on Al Jazeera English or on Al Jazeera, although that would be, I doubt that would happen, that they might run on those other components owned by the same folks. But no, we're American news for American viewers.
So essentially a competitor for CNN?
Yeah, compete with CNN and Fox and MSNBC and CNBC and hopefully see if we can take a couple years and see if we can gain some audience.
What is your geographic range?
Well, the entire Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
So, like I said, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, you know, everywhere from Medford to Anchorage to Helena, Montana.
Do you have to pitch stories, or do you have pretty free rein to what you're covering?
No, we'll be pitching to the folks back in New York, where that's where headquarters is. So we'll be coming up, generating story ideas constantly and pitching to them. And then going off the ones that they like or the ones that we can do easily, whether they've signed off on them or not, then we'll do those stories and you know, really hope to just tell. There's so much going on in the Pacific Northwest that just isn't happening other places that can be interesting. We have resources that other parts of the country just don't have, and those. Those things are the kernels of some really interesting stories. You know, the removal of the Elwha dams, the legalization of marijuana, the health of the orca pods, the transient and resident orca pods, the flap over live wolf or native wolf populations. We have so much stuff here that other people just don't have. You know, Washington, D.C. doesn't have orcas. They got no orcas.
They do no orcas in Washington,
no.
D.C.
No.
So essentially your job is to make us, meaning regional Pacific Northwest, us vibrant for the rest of the viewers.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. I mean, there's just so much going on here that I think can be of interest to other folks. And we will also, when there's big news, when there's breaking news, you know, when stuff blows up and burns down in the Pacific Northwest, we'll be there. We're committed to that, too, because we want to have a presence for major breaking news as well. We'll take on, if there are interesting political issues that might illuminate things for folks around the country, we'll tackle those. If there are business developments in the high-tech or biotech world or aviation, we'll tackle those.
Well, I know that you've done a lot of those kinds of stories during the two decades that you've worked for King, but one thing that you've done that I don't think you'll get to do for this new network is the many Olympics that you've covered. And I think viewers, there's that special thing. For some reason, you are the guy.
Yeah, I think my streak of seven Olympics is probably broken. But you know, you just never know.
You can be, well, next time it comes to Canada or the Pacific Northwest, you'll be there.
Yeah, the next time we have the Medford Olympics, I'm there.
When do you start this job?
Next week. I start next Monday. And I'm just, I get a whole 6 days off between careers, and I'm just itching to get going. I can't wait. I think it's going to be really, really fascinating.
And will Al Jazeera America be on the air next week?
No, not next week. We will launch on the 20th.
Wow.
And if you have current TV on your cable or your satellite provider now, that's where we'll be.
Well, Alan, we wish you all the best luck in this new phase of your journalism career.
Well, I really appreciate it. I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. And we have some branding challenges ahead of us. I think for a lot of American viewers, and that part of it to me also is part of the fascination and the intrigue. It's just going to be really interesting to try to build audience telling American stories to American viewers.
Alan Schauffler signed off King 5 TV this weekend. He's going to be working for Al Jazeera's America Network. Goes on the air on cable on the 20th of August. This is Weekday.
It's 9:28. Some tips for preserving the fruit of summer in a minute on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
You may never have heard the story of the centroid, but it's this marker that shifts with every census to indicate the changing population center of the U.S.
It's this moving, wandering center point. I think it's a sort of perfect representation of the American story.
Coming up on the story, a trip to Plato, Missouri, in search of the new center.
Tracking the Centroid, this afternoon at 2 o'clock on KUOW's second program stream, KUOW2. Learn more about it at KUOW2.org.
Support for KUOW comes from downtownseattleparking.com, featuring thousands of parking spaces in garages and lots in Seattle's Pioneer Square and Waterfront, a short walk for busy professionals heading to business meetings or lunch. More information at downtownseattleparking.com.
Today's forecast says it's going to be mostly sunny this afternoon with a high of 78, but currently it's cloudy and foggy and we're at 55 degrees. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:29.
From KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. It's been a great year for fruit in our region. Blueberries and raspberries abound. Strawberries, I think, are on their way out, at least the local ones. And the stone fruits, peaches, plums, and nectarines are piled high in market stalls. And then there are melons. Summer fruit is so plentiful that we can sometimes take it for granted. But by the dark days of December and January, you're going to be wishing for a taste of fruit besides an apple or a banana. So how do you make that happen besides flying off to a tropical hotspot, which is always very nice to do? The answer is to preserve that fresh fruit now. And joining us to talk about how to do that are two experts, Paige Irwin, who teaches at the Pantry at Delancey and Ballard. They offer a number of different classes for cooking. And you, I believe, Paige, teach kids specifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We do cooking with kids and parent classes that are a ton of fun.
So this is something you can do with your kids who may be off school. Amy Pennington is author, gardener, cook, and project woman extraordinaire. Her Pantry Royale preserving classes are offered every month, and she's got a series of ebooks, and each you've got, as I understand it, through the year, different ways to preserve things.
Yeah, we highlight one seasonal vegetable or fruit every month.
I have to confess just off the bat that canning fruit is sort of makes me think of some episode of I Love Lucy where they're boiling glass things and
right.
Then they pour hot stuff in and they put lids on, everything explodes onto the ceiling. So it's always terrified me. That's my confession.
It terrified me too before I got started.
But you were never That's terrified, Paige?
Well, I just kind of jumped in. And you learn things along the way and then it gets to be a really comfortable experience that you can just do in the afternoon.
So listeners, if you have questions about how to, maybe you have a bumper crop of cherries in your tree or plums. I bet everybody has an Italian plum tree. Or maybe you have a fruit share with a CSA and you like, what the heck did I want all these apricots for? These two women are here to help us save these for winter. Our phone number is 206-543-5869 or 1-800-289-5869. So, Amy, first, the difference between jam and preserves, is there one?
Not really between jam and preserves. It's more like jams and jellies. So jellies are a strained fruit, clear jam, typically has fruit pieces in it. Preserves, I don't think there's a huge distinction.
No,
Do you know, Paige?
A technical description difference between pieces and whole fruit, but I think to most people, a jam and a preserve, it's going to look the same to you. You're not going to be picky of what's put in front of you.
I call them all preserves.
Okay, so a preserve is, I mean, theoretically, I preserve a whole thing.
Right.
It's preserved.
Right. I mean, a preserve typically refers to something that is fruity and preserved, like compote-like. Mm-hmm. Just as a general umbrella, they're all preserves. It's just the act
of
preservation.
Them.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're talking about the act of preservation.
Yeah.
In particular, we want to preserve that taste of summer. And I guess, Paige, I want to start with you going back to my horrible nightmare vision of boiling things in a large cauldron. Is that how you make this?
I do a water bath canning. There's some European methods that are the USDA does not approve of, but I know plenty of people that do them home for jams and jellies that are safer to can. But the water bath canning to me it seems the most secure. And I mean, you're boiling for 10 minutes, so I don't, and it's, you know, a stock pot, not a cauldron. So I feel like even on a hot day, it's on for 10 minutes. I turn it off.
Okay, so say I show up at your house because you're going to do this for me, or at least walk me through it.
Okay.
And I've got a giant thing of blueberries. I think blueberries are ripe right now. Mm-hmm. And I love blueberries. Where do I start? They're clean, by the way.
Okay. Oh, good.
Blueberries are clean. So I've washed my blueberries. What do I do next?
I think you just decide what direction you want to go in. Blueberry jam is a really great place to start. And you can do a straight blueberry jam or if you want to infuse it with some other herbs or spices.
Let's do straight blueberry.
Do I
put them in a pot with sugar? Is that what happens?
If you're going to want to, you weigh them. You're going to do your sugar ratio based on the weight of the blueberries and figuring out ahead of time how many jars do you think you're going to be making here. And there's some great charts that you can look up on
they're laughing at my
Googly.
What the yield is going to be from a particular poundage of fruit. Because you're going to want to make sure your jars are sterilized, that you have new lids. You're not going to make all your jam and then realize that you don't have any lids or you don't have enough jars. And
I might do that. But,
yeah. So I always like to have everything kind of set up because once you're going, you really want to be able to get things in the jars and start canning them. So just having a good idea of how many jars. And I always have a couple extra jars clean and ready to go just in case. And if you don't use them, you can use them next time.
So say I had a quart of blueberries just to work small. Is there some easy ratio?
I was going to say, it tends to be about 5 pounds of fruit is about 2 pints of preserves. So most people use those little half pints. So you get like 4 half pints, which do fit in a stock pot. So Paige and I are similar in that I also use a stock pot. I don't have a proper canning pot. My stove is too small. My kitchen's too small. I don't have room for it. It yields about 4 small jars, which doesn't sound like a lot, but really, like, 1 small jar of jam should last most people or will last most people a few weeks to a month, you know, unless you're like some jam freak, in which case you should definitely make more. But I found when I first started many moons ago that I put up way too many preserves. And at the end of that year, I thought to myself, like, you know what, Amy Pennington, you actually don't like jam. Like, I just didn't barely eat any, you know? So you don't need a lot.
But they are really good holiday gifts.
They are
true,
excellent,
say,
excellent host gifts, yes.
So I'm really basic here. I cook the fruit down in one pot. I put them into the jars that I've got with their new lids. And then I put those things into the hot boiling water?
Correct. Yeah. So you basically, whatever your mixture is, you fill your jar.
Uh-huh.
You have to leave a little bit of headspace. Every recipe will have that ratio for you, so you need not worry. And then you submerge those glass jars, aka cans,
uh-huh,
in water by at least an inch and boil it for any kind of designated amount of time. It depends on the size of the jar. It depends on what it is you're cooking, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's where it's important to really read your recipes, and that's the way to keep everything safe, that use a trustworthy recipe and they will tell you how long does it need to be canned for, what's your headspace, and then you're good to go. So it's important to reference, you know, how much sugar do you need and how much time does it need in your canner.
And then you sort of add things like herbs or spices based on taste or some fancy recipe that you stumble upon.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who's getting started, recipes are definitely the way to go. Paige, did you start with recipes or did you just wing it? Okay, so I did as well. And now over the years, I have definitely loosened up. So you can add in any recipe that you're following, which for new beginners, you should follow a recipe. You can add spices or flavorings to taste.
Okay.
I typically will warn my students to kind of mellow out the taste a little bit. So if you, for instance, if you have a batch of grape jam and you want it to be infused with clove or something, you get it to a place where you're just kind of tasting it, because it does amplify in the jar over time.
Oh.
And if you get it, you know, if it's perfectly tasty in your mouth, it's going to be too much later. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, you got to kind of tone it down.
Okay. I'm now thinking it might be possible for me to do this. We're talking with Amy Pennington and Paige Irwin, both of whom are teachers and cooks, and you know you've got a ton of fruit sitting around your house.
Yeah.
So give us a call at 206-543-5869, or you can email weekday@kuow.org. And one last question, because we do have some calls.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do anything to save melons? I mean, berries and peaches and things make sense to me, but what about all that great melon taste?
Do you have ideas for melons?
I have not made one. I don't know if Amy has, but I've been reading a bunch of melon jam recipes.
So they exist.
That sound like a great summer project. I don't know if you've made
one. They do exist. For me, they're a little sugary because the melons don't have a really pronounced flavor. They're best eaten raw. I do make juices and freeze them for later, which you can use in broths or smoothies or like the pulp. And then the rinds.
Pickles, right?
Pickles.
Mm-hmm. Pickles, which is the only kind of preserving I've ever done.
Yeah.
Is making pickles.
Yeah.
I have done that. So I'm not at a loss.
It's
here.
Exactly the same process for pickles or jams or fruit or whatever.
Seems like the perfect thing to do for a party.
as long as there's no booze, you're in good
to
shape.
Be in the end, yeah.
I've seen that before.
We go to the phones. Our phone number again, 206-543-KUOW. Paige Irwin and Amy Pennington are here, and Beverly joins us from Tacoma. Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I wanted to share with you something that happened for me this year.
Oh, is this a good story or a bad story?
Good story. I have a lot of rhubarb.
Excellent.
And so I was making some rhubarb jam, and I also picked some raspberries. So it's like 7/8 rhubarb and 1/8 raspberries. But the jam came out tasting just like raspberry jam.
Oh, well, that's a nice surprise.
Yeah, and so then I tried it with apples. So it's mostly apples and a little bit of rhubarb. The jam came out tasting like rhubarb jam. If I gave you some, you would never say to me, it's just apple jam. It tastes like rhubarb jam.
Well, apples are so great that way because they're fairly innocuous, which is why apple juice is added to so many of our juice products and things. So congrats on figuring out the math on that one.
And then I have a question for you. While I was listening to you, I heard you talk about doing the bath. The way I learned how when I was a kid was to have my jars in boiling water. I bring out the jar one at a time, fill it, put the lid on. I don't do the bath.
What do you do?
My jars are in boiling water.
Before you put the fruit in?
Before you put the fruit in.
And then you just leave them sitting on the counter to cool down?
Yeah, and then they pop.
And oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, so that's safe?
You know, it's a... Safe is a whole other conversation. Yes, many people do that. I think the whole continent of Europe does that, and they live to tell the tale. So,
well, thanks for your call, Beverly. We're talking with Amy Pennington, whose voice you just heard, and Paige Irwin, who's also here with us. And I have one other question that has to do with butters, because when Beverly talked about apples, I think about fruit mm-hmm. butter, and you can that's a little bit like apple sauces, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they you continue cooking down the fruit. Only specific fruits are great for it. Apples are really great. You kind of make an applesauce consistency and keep cooking it down until it's spreadable, kind of like, you know, room temperature butter, which is where the name comes from. There is no butter in there, but a great, I made a great peach butter last summer. You can use a lot of different fruits and have those in
that
the winter.
Good. Yeah, that's the whole idea that I want to, in January, when I cannot face a navel orange or a banana again, although Satsuma's kind of come in there to mm-hmm. perk you up a little, something, it would be so wonderful to just pull out peaches and think about August.
That's exactly how I got into canning.
Because you wanted to think about
summer. Wanted to eat locally all year long and eat cheaply, which you can do when there's a glut of things. If you buy 25 pounds of it, it's the most economical you can ever get. And so, yeah, just like a little squirrel storing up for winter.
Mm-hmm. if you've got a phone call, 206-543-5869 is the number to call. We've got some emails. Leslie says, how would I preserve cherries and brandy to make a Manhattan, another way to get through those long winter months?
A woman after my own heart. Let me tell you. Do you brandy fruit too?
I just made some a couple weeks ago, which I admit I have not tried yet, but I used some pie cherries that I picked up at the farmer's market and brandied them, and they are beautiful.
So what's that? How is that different from preserves? I mean, that is a kind of preserve,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. It's really simple. The recipe that I used just combined the cherries that are pitted, so a little bit more pre-prep when you're using a stone fruit, and then mix them with a little bit of sugar and barely cook them at all because the cherry is very fragile. And I put them in the jars, then you top them off with a little bit of brandy. And I can those.
Yum.
You let them sit until the brandy kind of absorbs into the cherries, and I'll admit to squirreling away a little bit. They're so beautiful. I have not opened one.
Yeah, those are delicious. and they're nice on cheesecake, too, if you don't
brandy
have
cherries.
Yeah, just any kind of like side dish. But those are super simple. The only thing with brandy cherries you have to be careful of, as Pedro's mentioning, you barely cook the cherries before you put them in a hot water bath, which will continue cooking them, which means they're kind of raw. And so they have a lot of air in them and tend to float. And so first and foremost, you definitely want to make sure you pack down your jars. So when you fill them, you fill your jar and literally tap it on your counter so
like
that you can fit
effect.
As many as you can. I know, right? and you also want to make sure that you leave the proper headspace. It's usually about 3/4 of an inch because they do rise. Mm-hmm. And many of my students are like, "But there was brandy in the water." And it's because they've overfilled the jar. So don't overfill your jars. Don't get greedy.
Okay. So make more jars. Maybe that's...
Yes. Just a few more.
We're talking about canning, preserving, and the vast array of things that you can do. Jenny says, I have onions in my garden. I'd like to make onion jam. Can you can onion jam as opposed to freezing onion jam?
Do you want to?
I'm not sure.
You cannot.
Yeah.
This is a really good segue into safety, which is... anytime you are canning something that is high in acid, it is safe, meaning that you are not going to die or kill anyone. And the reason is because botulism, which is the one we're all worried about, doesn't exist in a highly acidic environment. Most fruits, all fruits, have a high acidity, so they're automatically safe.
But onions
right?
are not.
And onions are not. Correct.
There are other things you can do.
You
with
have
onions.
To add vinegar.
Mm-hmm. I just did some. I grew some little pearl onions in my garden, and we tried a new crazy recipe that smokes them first. So we'll see
how
it goes. And then we pickled them. So adding the acid makes them safe to eat.
Right.
And you could later turn them into a relish or a jam. You just will do that when you're ready to eat them and not before you can them.
Yeah. That said, if she wants to make onion jam, sugar does act as a preservation tool. So she can make a big batch of it and just keep it in her fridge for anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks.
Mm.
You know, and it should keep safe. Just make sure to keep it airtight and... if you could keep a little plastic wrap on the surface, it would keep for several weeks.
I was just going to ask about books, but Amy does have these ebooks that will include sort of a revolving series mm-hmm. of recipes, so you can check those out. And recipes abound, assuming.
Mm-hmm. My first book, actually, Urban Pantry, has a chapter dedicated to what we both do, Paige and I. It's called, I called it Small Batch Preserving. And basically it's those, like I said, 5 pounds of fruit, just a few jars.
We have now, of course, everybody woke up and said, oh, yeah, I do have questions about this. But here's just a comment from Grandma Joyce Jensen. You're all invited to my kitchen in Paulsbo to help me process 60 pounds of peaches. In a fit of enthusiasm, I bought 3 boxes of Blazing Star and Arondo Monday. They're beauties. Fortunately, they aren't all 100% ripe. Today, I'm freezing and making jam. Yeah. Tomorrow, canning a load or two of quarts for my daughter's young family.
Lucky.
Well, it's a perfect thing for you to be listening to, Grandma Joyce Jensen. Here's Joyce in West Seattle. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi. I've already made some strawberry jam and raspberry jam. The strawberry jam, and I used shore gel, which I didn't hear you mention. They're adding pectin. You just mentioned sugar and fruit. The strawberry jam ended up very saucy instead of spready. And so something I saw said you should add some lemon juice because maybe it was too sweet. So I made some raspberry jam and added some lemon juice, and that ended up pourable rather than spreadable.
Well, do you want to take this one, Paige?
I think if you want.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I don't use a pectin product. I use natural pectins in my jams. Pectin is naturally occurring in all fruits and just in varying degrees and levels. Basically, you had a problem with your pectin. So that shore gel boxes do have recipes with lemon juices and sugar proportions, and you have to follow those to a T because acid from lemon juice, pectin, and sugar all work together. Sugar pulls water molecules away from the pectin. Pectin is the thing that creates the bond, and it's this whole science. And if you start dinking around with the proportions, you will throw off the hopeful outcome. So it sounds to me like you have an issue with one of those is off, whether or not you didn't add enough pectin or sugar or acid, I'm not quite sure. But I will tell you, putting lemon juice in something isn't going to do anything except for play with the acidity. You don't need to do it for a safety reason, so at that point you're only doing it for taste. Pectin exists in the membranes, seeds, and rinds of lemons, not the juice. So how I do strawberries and raspberries is I put them all in a pot. I add sugar, probably less than is normal. I don't like a very sweet jam. And I'll throw in either the core of an apple, which is also high in pectin, or half of a lemon, just the skins. Cook it until the fruits are just about bursting, and then pull it off the heat and let it sit overnight. This is a technique I learned in a book called Mace Confiture. It's by a woman, Christine Ferber, F-E-R-B-E-R. And she uses that process, and I have adopted that for my own home kitchen. And that has worked for me over the years very well.
What do you do with the apple core and the lemon rind?
You just pull them out.
Okay.
So in the morning, I set it back over heat and cook it. It tends to cook much faster. That process gives the pectin a chance to kind of create those bonds and for the acidity to work and pull the pectin out. And then the cook time is usually anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes in the morning.
That doesn't seem like too bad.
Not too shabby.
Good luck, Joyce. We go to Doug, who has a question that I had as well. So I'll let you ask it, Doug.
Oh, hi there. I don't like to use a lot of sugar in my the fruits that I process, that I pick myself. And I'm just wondering if you had some ideas for doing more things without using sugar at all.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things. You don't need sugar to preserve fruits. You could can fruits whole in water. The sugar is just there to kind of preserve a little bit of the flavor and the shape and the color of the fruit. So you could just can in water. You'll just kind of lose a little bit of the flavor of the fruit into the water. You could also explore kind of pickling some fruit and using that as a savory option. I made some pickled plums last summer from a plum tree in my yard, and pickled cherries are really great, and they can be great accompaniments with cheese and cold meats and for picnics, and kind of a different way to use your fruit that has very little sugar.
And when you speak of pickling, do you speak of, are you talking about the lactic acid type or the vinegar type?
I've done the vinegar type. So, yeah, it's just a combination of vinegar, usually some spices, maybe a chili pepper or some cinnamon, and then canning those and having them ready to go. I have not done a lot of lactic.
So when you do a quick vinegar, you heat up, you heat the vinegar and whatever else you're doing, and you pour it over what you're pickling. Is that how it works in this instance?
Yeah, some of them, depending on the recipe, sometimes you'll cook them down a little bit like a jam, but you'll make a basic brine with vinegar, usually a tiny bit of sugar, some salt, and then whatever spices you want to use, and add that to your fruit and can those and kind of experiment with the different spices you want to use and have them ready to go with your savory dishes.
Good luck with that, Doug. That sounds delicious to me. I want to be coming to both your houses to eat. We're talking with Paige Irwin and Amy Pennington. A lot of people have questions now. And our phone number, 206-543-5869, or toll-free, 1-800-289-5869. Barry in Magnolia, you are on the air.
Hey, good morning. I have a quick question. My wife and I made a bunch of raspberry jam last summer, and I am wondering how long will it last. We've been giving it away left and right, and I just want to be concerned. When should I start worrying about it?
Well, never. It's fine.
Wow.
Just kidding. the accepted amount of time is a year, but that really is not necessarily true. It's not that it goes bad in the jar. It's just that the only thing holding that seal tight is that little rubber gasket on top of the lid. So the rubber degrades over time. If you sat there and played with the rubber band long enough, you would eventually snap it. And it's the same process for candy jars. So they last as long as that seal lasts. And the only thing that could happen to those that could actually go wrong is the flavor will start changing significantly. The color changes, the consistency changes. And you may have some mold growth if air gets in and under the can, which is not that big of a deal.
Okay, mold's not good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call. So essentially, give it all away as Christmas gifts and tell
give
people
it away.
To eat
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think the idea, which is nice to think about, is you want to eat all this before the next year, not just for safety, but you were preserving last summer's fruit for this winter, and by next summer, you want to be eating that summer's fruit. So it's nice to tally this time of year that you have all this raspberry jam. This year, you'll make less,
yeah.
You know, or give that away at Christmas. So you kind of get to know over the years, how much are you going to eat, and how much should you make every summer?
We've got lots of emails, so I think I'll read some of those. Karen in Bellevue says, hi, I have a backyard of blackberries and a garden full of jalapenos that are ripe, and I want to make hot pepper blackberry jelly. Two questions. One, the best way to get completely clear berry juice, do I boil with a bit of water and let them drain gently in the colander? And two, how to get pepper juice since I want my jelly to be clear?
Yeah, I think, you want to move as slowly as possible, I believe. So you want to just release all that juice out of your blackberries and then get them into a jelly strainer if you have it, or a cheesecloth lined colander, and just let that sit overnight to really let all the juice out. I haven't added jalapeno juice. I've only made jalapeno jellies.
That you can just, you can probably just put the raw jalapeno, once you have the blackberry juice strained with all the seed in the pulp, you can probably just throw the jalapeno in there and infuse it. And to your liking. If you were so inclined, you could use a juicer as well and just add a spoon or two as you go. So either method would probably work just fine.
We have quite a few sugar alternative questions. Hi, Tanya in Auburn. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wondered, with all the new health craze and stuff, is stevia something that you could use instead of sugar?
That's Amy's response. Paige, do you have a different answer?
You know, I haven't worked with it a lot. I mean, sugar, it's been used for so long because it's a really nice neutral base, and it does interact with the fruit and this you know, the balance and the chemistry of creating a jam. That when you're using stevia, you're going to use, it's such a sweet product, you're going to be using a lot less. So I think getting the same consistency is going to be...
That was the way more professional answer. She's absolutely right.
Okay, that was the so the answer.
I mean, I think
no.
Experimenting with stevia is an interesting. I mean, it is plant based. You can buy a stevia plant and have the leaves, and if you taste them, they are very sweet. But that's not going to translate into creating a jam consistency,
because it's also, this is like a chemistry set kind of thing. You have
100%.
To use the right chemistry, which leads me to two questions that came via email. I prefer to use honey rather than sugar in cooking. Bob wants to know if it will cause problems for jam.
It's the same thing that Paige just mentioned. It doesn't cause problems. The taste will be nice. You'll definitely have to use a different proportion, so you're kind of experimenting on your own, and you absolutely play with the consistency. So you won't get a nice jammy consistency. It'll always be kind of smooth and thick like honey.
And Mark in Bellingham writes, when we can our peaches, we leave out the sugar, but we add a peach pit to each quart jar to keep the peaches from turning brown, which, that's not about consistency, that's about color.
Yeah,
right?
I haven't...
Yeah, I don't think... peaches are... Well, It is my understanding that peach pits, cherry pits, and that the like are added to jars because they have an almondy flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of they even like soak liqueur in apricot kernels for that flavor. So it's probably for flavor, not for, I don't think it changes the acidity will help with the browning, some lemon juice or something. Mm-hmm. But I've never heard of the pit being used in that way.
We have some really great comments. So I want to go through some of them. Clydia writes, I make dozens of pints of jam every year, apricot, fig, blackberry, raspberry, etc. Earlier, one of your guests cautioned against making too much. I just want to say homemade jam makes a wonderful hostess gift. People always appreciate it. And since my husband is spoiled rotten and has to have homemade jam every morning, I make most of it for him, but I never worry about too much. And Susie writes, I wanted to tell you about a form of preserving that comes from my home country, Germany. It's called Rumtopf. You put layers of whatever fruits in season starting mm-hmm. in January in an earthen closable pot and soak it down with rum to cover each layer. By the time December rolls around, your pot should be full and ready to be tested. You can do the same thing with cabbage. Maybe not rum, though. Salt.
Yeah.
So these are, Paige, the kinds of things that you mentioned that are not approved by the FDA.
Yes, but...
Yeah, but people have been doing stuff like that for mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, booze is a great tool for preservation. It's a sterile environment, you know, mm-hmm. so...
It's all about creating the right environment that's inhospitable to these bacteria that you don't want. And there's positive bacteria. That's the whole... If we want to go into vegetable fermenting, you're creating an environment that the bad bacteria can't live in. So you can have things at room temperature and you can have things out in the air. You need to be creating this environment that is inhospitable and just being careful about that.
Well, with that, I have a last question of my own. What's the most important thing if I'm going to be brave to set out to do it? First step, where do I start? Just looking at the fruit or where would
The farmer's market. I think going and seeing what's delicious and seeing what looks good to you and asking the farmers what is really great this week. And you want to be finding perfectly ripe fruit. You don't want to buy. I think we've all made that mistake where you're like, I really want to make something with pears, but they're hard, and you don't do it that day. You have to wait until they're ripe, or you're just going to have canned hard pears. So I think just finding what looks delicious and what's great that day.
And then also just, you know, being prepared. So it is canning season. This is the season now where all the summer harvest is coming in. Everything's starting to come in at once. It gets a little overwhelming. So the best you can do for yourself is to just prepare in advance. Have a bunch of jars waiting. You know, get a small case of quarter pints, half pints, pints, sugar. Make sure your pantry's stocked with sugar. Always have lemons around. Everything needs acidity of some kind, or a store lemon juice. And then just spices that you like. So if you love ginger, great. Buy two big roots of ginger, and then you have it for both pickles and jams or whatever. And then that way, when the whimsy strikes, or you're driving along the road and someone has a, you know, cherries out of their pickup truck, and you're like, yeah, cherries, then you just pick them up and you go home and you have everything. It kind of takes the pressure off to do a lot of prep. Mm-hmm.
So a stock pantry, just like you would have for cooking, you need to have a stock pantry for canning and preserving. I'd like to thank both of you so much for coming in and giving me a little bit of courage. Amy Pennington, an author, gardener, cook, her Pantry Royale canning classes are offered each month, and she's got a new series of ebooks that offer monthly recipes for different kinds of preserves. Paige Irwin teaches at the pantry at Delancey in Ballard, classes for kids and for adults as well. And as you heard, she's got it all over with the pickling and the canning. So inspiration, folks. Head out to the markets.
Hop to it.
Yep, hop to it. This is Weekday.
And now, the sound of the day.
Okay.
I think I've got it.
It's a whale.
Oh, I was thinking an elephant playing a didgeridoo.
No, Mark sent us that sound. And although Mark thinks it starts to sound like a whale at the end of it, it's actually the sound of Mark's bathroom sink faucet. He says it's almost like a musical instrument and reminds him of playing the theremin. Maybe something in your home sounds...
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.